think I've discovered the missing link, the missing key to pretty much everything. It came to me while watching a recent video from Barbarossa regarding transhumanism, which I'll link to. One of the unanswered questions from my Traditionalism Cycle videos is what exactly caused patriarchal traditionalism to become gynocentric traditionalism, and what exactly during the collapse causes a return to patriarchal traditionalism once again. I knew that whatever it was could be the key to overcoming gynocentrism, and it was so obvious. In fact, I've heard the answer numerous times in bits and pieces, like a puzzle, but only now have the pieces snapped together and I can see the bigger picture. Rather than simply tell you, I want to take you through my thought process, and hopefully you'll have the same eureka moment I did before I reveal the answer myself. One obstacle that will get in the way of the recognition of this epiphany is a misunderstanding of gynocentrism and male disposability during war, particularly in ancient times. Male disposability can be indicative of gynocentrism, such as prioritizing women and children in cases of sinking ships and burning buildings. The military is overwhelmingly male, and only men are subject to the draft, but even in cases where there is a female draft, such as Israel, combat troops are still over 95% male. Isn't this a classic case of gynocentrism? No, I contend that it isn't a case of female preference, but male competence. Terence Popp did a video about women in combat called Can't Cut the Mustard, link in the description. In this video, Popp demonstrates how inept at combat women are. The United States is talking about lowering the standards for women in order to put more women in combat roles, which is going to get people killed in battle. In countries where both men and women have the same standards, women only make up about 4% of combat troops. Not because women are being protected due to gynocentrism, but because they can't meet the standards and aren't qualified to be there. In a combat situation, you want to know that the person next to you can drag you to safety in case you get shot. The standards ensure that every man to your left and to your right can carry you and save you if need be. If you put women out there with lower standards, they're going to be killed, and they're going to get men killed. Anyone watching this video who has served in the military knows exactly what I'm talking about. Now, this isn't to say there aren't exceptions, and globally those exceptions equal about 4%. Meaning that while 4% of women are capable enough to hang with the men, 96% fail, and would be nothing more than a liability in combat. Keep in mind that this is in the present-day military with all the technology that we have. Now imagine going back in time to before the advent of gunpowder, when every weapon of combat required upper body strength. Women would be beyond useless. I'm going to play a clip from the movie 300 where Leonidas explains to Ephialtes that he isn't cut out to be a soldier, and if he wanted to help, he could tend to the wounded and bring them in water, which is exactly the extent of women in combat as well.
Your father should have told you how a phalanx works. We fight as a single, impenetrable unit. That is the source of our strength. Each Spartan protects the man to his left, thigh to neck, with his shield. A single weak spot, and the phalanx shatters. From thigh to neck, Ephialtes. I am sorry, my friend, but not all of us were made to be soldiers.
We're done!
If you want to help in a Spartan victory,
yes,
clear the battlefield of the dead, tend the wounded, bring them water. But as for the fight itself, I cannot use you.
Clearly the Spartans didn't worship people like Ephialtes. Not allowing them into combat wasn't an act of preference, but self-preservation. Their phalanx would crumble and all the men would be killed if they lowered the standards, and it's no different today. So understand that in almost all cases, women not being allowed into combat is to the benefit of everyone, despite the male disposability involved. Once you understand that, the reason that patriarchy existed during the Bronze and Dark Ages becomes much easier to see and understand. I believe that gynocentrism is not an innate instinct but a rational choice, often reinforced culturally, wherein men respond to their environment in order to achieve reproductive success, and I will prove the exact mechanism for this, and what was unique about the Bronze and Dark Ages that allowed men to overcome gynocentrism and impose a patriarchal system instead. Consider two tribes of 20,000 people going to war during the Bronze and Dark Ages. Each tribe has enjoyed relative peace for about a generation, so the populations of men and women are evenly split. So in both tribes, there are about 10,000 men and 10,000 women. When these tribes engage in battle, obviously only the men will fight because, as I've previously shown, women would be nothing but a liability. When the battle is over, there would be significantly fewer men than the original 20,000. Let's say that one tribe was killed to the last man, while the other tribe suffered losses of 50%, leaving only 5,000 men from the victorious tribe. So now these 5,000 men that survived the war have 10,000 women from their own tribe and the 10,000 women from the conquered tribe to mate with. That's 4 women for every man. Now remember that even in modern times, but especially during the harsh environment of the ages we're talking about, women were completely dependent on men for their survival. Women couldn't hunt or farm because they were too weak. Neither could they build or fight to protect themselves. Now some say that because these women were spared death, this is actually a gynocentric system, but nothing could be further from the truth. When you have 4 women for every man, and the women are wholly dependent on men for survival, the price of pussy crashes through the floor. And men can be as cruel to women as they want. They can rape them on demand. Hell, they can even murder 3 women each and still have reproductive success. A scarcity of men causes patriarchy. It's the most obvious and yet ironic thing ever. Think of the feminists like the femi-theists that say things and advocate for the male population to be reduced by 90% in order to achieve true gender equality. Ironically, doing this would result in the remaining 10% of men instituting a patriarchal system and enslaving and raping women until the male population was restored. Some of you may not believe that 10% of the population is capable of conquering 90%, but put down the Hollywood bullshit and think of actual women in real life. We're talking about men who, because of male scarcity, have lost their entire sense of gynocentrism and will fight using all their strength with no mercy. How many women do you think it would require to take down even a single man? 9? 15? 25? Just look at all the videos that YouTube keeps taking down of men hitting women back after they've been assaulted. These women slap and hit these men over and over again with relatively little effect, while one solid punch from the man knocks them out cold, or at least sends them crying to the floor. After knocking out a few women with one punch, I can easily imagine the 90% female population making these men kings and submitting to them willingly. And then within a generation or two, the populations would be restored. This is actually nature's way of dealing with gynocentrism and explains the mechanism for the traditionalism cycle. In a post-collapse, there is conflict and bloodshed between men which lowers the male population. Male scarcity leads to patriarchal traditionalism as women submit to be the property of the men who remain. And the men treat these women like shit because there's so many of them anyway that their approval or permission is not required to achieve reproductive success. However, over time, these men are victims of their own success. They build fortified cities, and they establish peace within their realms. This peace allows for the male population to increase until it is about on parity with the female population, and it is this parity that is the cause of gynocentrism. Now, I said previously that gynocentrism wasn't an instinct but a rational choice, and here's why. In a culture where the male and female populations are roughly equal, men must compete to win the affection and thus reproductive access to the woman within that culture. If men cannot simply eliminate each other as animals do, they must compete by spending money on women and proving themselves to be more worthy of her vagina than the other men vying for her affection. This is why I couldn't find a central event that turned patriarchal traditionalism into gynocentric traditionalism, because it's not a single event, but in fact a lack of events that causes it. The more wars, and the more unstable the male population, the more patriarchal the society and culture. But as technology and civilization make wars less numerous and catastrophic to the male population, gynocentrism becomes the rational strategy for reproductive success. Now, I'm going to blow your fucking mind. Think about the golden age that the trad cons yearn to return to, the fabled decade of the 1950s, the decade where men were men and women were women. Does anyone remember what happened in the 1940s? Far from feminism rising up and seizing the opportunity to use their superior numbers to overthrow the patriarchy, women became submissive to men. They became submissive little kittens because male scarcity made gynocentrism unnecessary for the men. Now, unfortunately, the post-war peace meant that this patriarchal renaissance only lasted a decade, and as the first baby boomers became of age in the 60s and brought the male population back up to parity, we had the counter-movement known as second-wave feminism. By the way, what happened to first wave feminism? Oh, that's right, World War I happened, and the women went back to being submissive little kittens because of the male scarcity after World War I. Now here's the thing, the wars America is fighting now are very tame by historical standards. Only about 7,000 Americans have died in both Iraq and Afghanistan to this day combined, in a nation of over 300 million people. So I don't see third-wave feminism going away anytime soon. However, if there was ever a World War III, and millions of men were killed, all these feminists would shave their armpits, get on their knees, and suck your dick just for the taste of it. So now that we know the mechanism of how patriarchy becomes gynocentrism and vice versa, is there any way to stop it? Yes, there is. Again, the key is male scarcity, and the natural mechanism is war, which decimates the male population. However, any technology that allows men to achieve reproductive success would achieve the same ends. Brifold's law ensures that women determine the shape and direction of society as long as they are the gatekeepers of reproduction. But if technology allows men to bypass them through things like surrogacy, artificial wombs, cloning technology, etc., men no longer need women, and yet due to women's inferiority, women will continue to need men. This creates male scarcity without the need for war. Let's say that we have a given population of 100 million people, 50% men and 50% women. Normally, this society would be incredibly gynocentric because there is no male scarcity, and if men want reproductive success, they will need to compete and secure the approval of a female. However, let's say that technologies that enable artificial reproduction are developed, and even if they are prohibitively expensive for the general population, it allows the top half, or 25 million men, to reproduce without using gynocentric pandering. This artificially lowers the pool of potential male suitors from 50 million to 25 million, while the pool of women would remain at 50 million, meaning that for practical purposes, there are twice as many women as men, and male scarcity has been achieved without bloodshed. This male scarcity will end feminism, as women, who as a reminder need men, must compete for the remaining men who cannot afford the reproductive technology, or must underbid the technology by actually being worth a shit to a man. Ironically, the costs associated with technology are known to depreciate rapidly, and eventually the technologies will become so cheap and affordable that the only way women will be able to compete is to become absolutely submissive to men while earning their own money and asking for little or nothing in return. So the real enemy isn't feminism per se, but those who would stand in the way of these technologies. For example, in the UK, it's illegal for a single man to use a surrogate mother. However, the main opponents of these technologies will be from the far right and not the far left, as the religious right views cloning and artificial reproduction as quote-unquote playing God. But here's the thing, we can couch the argument to benefit them. Conservatives, don't you want to go back to the 1950s, when you could slap a woman on the ass and tell her to make you a sandwich and she would smile and actually do it? I'm telling you, man, reproductive technology will do it. Male scarcity, bro, you don't have to do it. You think it's playing God? Fine, you can do it the old-fashioned way. You will still benefit from the male scarcity, and women will actually begin obeying men, just like the Bible says. The last point I want to make is that feminism itself is a luxury. It doesn't exist in poor and unstable countries for a reason, and each so-called wave only lasts until the next war causes the male population to become scarce. Male scarcity is the key, and it's inevitable. It will happen either due to collapse in war, or may be achieved without bloodshed by separating reproduction from gynocentrism using technology. Boom, beer me.